President Austin, members of the Board of Trustees, Dr. Rich, members of the faculty, distinguished members of the faculty, members of the class of 1999, the great, great class of 1999, parents, friends, ladies and gentlemen, I am thrilled by this honorary degree. I am complimented, I am touched, and I am as pleased as can be to take part in what is a very great day for all of us. Did you know that if you were a flea, you could jump as high as Rockefeller Center? Moreover, you could do it about 30,000 times without stopping. I thought you might like to know that to impress somebody sometime and maybe use it in an interview. I'm very interested in science and very interested in the natural sciences especially. I've written about Louis Agassiz's work on glaciers. I've written about Alexander von Humboldt's climb of Mount Chimborazo. And I've written about Miriam Rothschild, from whom I learned all about fleas. She is the queen of the fleas. And over the years, I've written books in which science and medicine and technology figure strongly. And I don't believe it's possible to understand the history of our time, especially our time, without a sense of the impact of science and technology on history. In my work, a number of engineers have been kind enough to help me understand how such marvels as the Brooklyn Bridge and the Panama Canal were built. And my experience is that it's possible with science and technology to understand far more than you might imagine, and furthermore find it extremely interesting if someone is good enough to put it in English for you. I found infinite pleasure in reading into the lives of scientists and engineers of the past, and in their own writings, and often in their own writings, I've been advised well in other ways. I think, for example, of the great American botanist, Liberty Hyde Bailey of Cornell, who was once, I learned today, the commencement speaker here at the University of Connecticut in the year 1916. Liberty Hyde Bailey was the recipient of all kinds of mail. He advised people all over the country and indeed the world on botanical issues. But my favorite response was to the woman who wrote to ask him his advice on what to do about dandelions in her lawn. And he replied, "Learn to love them." But it's the humanities that they come to mean the most to me, that come first in my life, in my work, that count above all for me. I'm an English major who happened into history. I'm a reader who decided to write the kind of books that he loved to read. So it's the banner of the humanities that I carry, and happily. It's why I feel so honored to take part in this high occasion, and why I want so much to say what I have to say to you. To perceive clearly and make sense of the time in which one lives is always very difficult, and the more so in the midst of rapid change. Paleontologists talk about what they call punctuated equilibrium, the idea that evolution doesn't occur at a steady, even pace over time, but comes in bursts. The fossil record of the sea urchin, for example, may show little or no variation at all for long stretches of time, millions of years. Then suddenly, change greatly in no time at all, geologically speaking. It's a concept that might apply to us and our time. Change, tremendous change, is all around us and accelerating much faster than we know. And as the world changes, we are changed. Electronic marvels proliferate by geometric proportions. Everything moves faster, and our notions of time and space adjust of necessity, whether we realize it or not. Information is available now as never before, and at the touch of a finger. Information has become an industry, a commodity to be packaged, promoted, ballyhooed, marketed incessantly. The tools for accessing data grow ever more wondrous and ubiquitous and essential if we're to keep in step, or so we've come to believe. All hail the web, the internet, the information highway. We are being sold the idea that information is learning, and I have a terrible feeling we're being sold a bill of goods. Information isn't learning. Information isn't wisdom. It isn't common sense. It isn't kindness. It isn't trustworthiness or good judgment or imagination or self-expression or a sense of humor or courage. It doesn't tell us right from wrong. Knowing the area of the state of Connecticut in square miles or the jumping capacity of a flea may be all fine and good and useful and even valuable, but it isn't learning in itself. If information were learning, you could become educated by memorizing the World Almanac. Were you to memorize the World Almanac, you wouldn't be educated. You'd be weird. My message is in praise of the greatest of all avenues to learning, to wisdom, to adventure, to pleasure, insight, to understanding of human nature, understanding ourselves and our world and our place in the world. I rise on this beautiful afternoon here in this center of learning to sing again the old, old faith in books. In reading books, reading for life, all your life. Nothing ever invented provides such sustenance, such infinite reward for time spent as a good book. Jefferson told John Adams, "I could not live without books." Adams, who through a very long life read more even and more deeply even than Jefferson, and who spent what little extra money he ever had on books and books alone, wrote to Jefferson at the age of 79 of a particular set of books that he longed to have on the lives of the saints. He wanted to read them all 47 volumes. Once upon a time, in 1886, in the dead of winter in North Dakota Territory, with the temperature well below zero, young Theodore Roosevelt took off in a makeshift boat, accompanied by two of his ranch hands, downstream on the Little Missouri River in chase of a couple of thieves who had stolen his prized rowboat. After days on the river, he caught up and got the draw on them, and they, quite understandably, surrendered. Then, after finding a man with a team and a wagon, Roosevelt set off again to haul the thieves cross-country to justice. He left his ranch hands behind to tend the boat, and he walked alone behind the wagon, rifle at ready. They were headed across the snow-covered wastes of the Badlands to the railhead at Dickinson. And Roosevelt walked the whole way, 40 miles. It was an absolutely astonishing feat, what might be called a defining moment in that eventful life. When he got to Dickinson, the sheriff asked him why he hadn't just shot the thieves in the first place and saved himself the walk. But what makes this story so especially memorable is that during that time, around the campfire, who knows how, he managed to read all of Anna Karenina, the whole book. I often think of that when people say they haven't any time to read. There's always time to read. And if your experience, you, the class of 1999, is anything like my own, the best, most important books of your life, the best you and most important books you will ever read are still ahead of you. Probably you'll read them in the next 4 or 5 years. Education, Yeats said, is not filling a pail, but the lighting of a fire. I have some calculations for you to consider. Reportedly, the average American watches 28 hours of television every week, or approximately 4 hours a day. The average person, I'm also told, reads at a rate of 250 words per minute. So based on these statistics, were the average American to spend those 4 hours a day, with a book instead of watching television, the average American could, in a week, read the complete poems of T.S. Eliot, 2 plays by Thornton Wilder, including Our Town, the complete poems of Maya Angelou, Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, The Great Gatsby, and the Book of Psalms, all in 1 week. If the average American were to forsake television for a second week, he or she could read all of Moby Dick, including the part about the whales, and make a good start, if not finish, The Brothers Karamazov. Read for pleasure. Read what you like and all you like. Read literally to your heart's content and let one book lead to another. They nearly always do. Read, read, read is my commencement advice. Take up a great author, new or old, and read everything he or she's written. Read about places you've never been. Read biography. Read history. Read the books that have changed history. Tom Paine's Common Sense, Frederick Douglass's autobiography, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, to name a few. Everyone should know all 3 of those books. I love the mysteries of Ruth Rendell and the letters of E.B. White. I have an old copy of Wind, Sand, and Stars by Saint-Exupéry that I would hate ever to part with. I'm particularly fond of Carson McCullers and Wallace Stegner. And for a book I'm working on, I'm having the best time imaginable reading the works of the writers of the great 18th century. Defoe, Sterne, Fielding, Tobias Smollett, and the amazing Samuel Johnson. To judge by their prose, I can't help but feel that the quill pen is still well ahead of the word processor. Imagine all there is to read that has been written here in Connecticut by Connecticut authors. The works of Twain, Barbara Tuchman, Paul Horgan, John Hersey, William Styron, the plays of Eugene O'Neill and Arthur Miller, the poetry of Robert Penn Warren and Wallace Stevens, not to say Noah Webster's dictionaries. By all means, read Dickens. Read those books you know you are supposed to have read and imagine as dreary. A classic may be defined as a book that stays long in print, and a book that stays long in print only because it is exceptional. Why exclude the exceptional from your experience? Read the classics. Go back and read again the books written supposedly for children, and especially if you think they were only written for children. My choice would be the wind and the willows. There's so much, so very much to be learned by keeping company with toad, rat, and mole. Do not, whatever you do, wait until you're past 50 to read Don Quixote. Pack a book with you in your suitcase whenever you go anywhere. To carry a book with you when you go, when you travel, is old advice, but it's good advice. John Adams urged his son, John Quincy, to carry a volume of poetry with him. You'll never be alone, he said, with a poet in your pocket. And when you read a book that you love, a book you feel has enlarged the experience of being alive, a book that lights the fire, spread the word. Spread the word. Good luck to all of you. You're on your way, and if I'm any judge, the future is full of more promise than ever before. Times of great change can be times of extreme stress, but they are also times when we can learn the most. We need, as never before, the capacity to think, and to think with the heart as well as the mind. For all our troubles and problems, the best is yet to come. God bless you.